Coming up on podcast 1141, 1 million new electric vehicles arrive in Europe. Stick around, got all the details for you. Also on the podcast today, what's the best EV deal in the US? We will certainly give you one good example, why the right to repair is very important with electric vehicles, and we talk about electric scooters and how many of those could be on the roads very soon. Stick around, I've got the details and many more stories today to start the week. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily for Monday, 12th of July. My name is Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story so you don't have to. We'll kick off with a bit of news which will please any Volkswagen fans. And actually, I'm pretty pleased about this news because I think he's doing an amazing job at driving forward the general move to electric vehicles. Volkswagen on Friday agreed at the board of management to hand the chief executive Herbert Diess a contract extension under which he'll lead the car maker until October 2025, a victory made possible by the recent departure of the Works Council head. Now, the Works Council head and Herbert Diess have clashed the most over recent years. Of course, it's the head of the Works Council, his job on the board to represent the workers, and EVs in some cases may require fewer people to assemble them, but maybe those jobs get switched to other industries or adjacent industries. But either way, Herbert Diess a few weeks ago was either a kind of back me or sack me moment, and the board said, we like where you're going, you can stay till October 2025. Of course, many senior management positions like this are, you know, on a contract. They're not staff and a job for life, they're fixed term. Volkswagen Supervisory Board was discussing a two-year extension to his contract. That would have expired in 2023. Diess will be able to see through an ambitious goal, says Reuters today, for VW Group to become Europe's largest car maker, and by the middle of the decade, the world's leading EV maker, overtaking key rival Tesla. That's Herbert Diess's plan, at least, and I think he's doing a really good job so far. Some would say they're a little bit late to the party, but they seem to have got the party started, so to speak, because there's so many EVs coming out of that group now and so many more to come. The platform on which they're based, the MEB platform, apart from cars like the Porsche Taycan, Audi e-tron GT, they're on something different. But that is really being used for everything from VWs, Audis, the Seats, the Skodas, and even Fords. They're not even VW Group over here in Europe as well. So I think they've done that kind of basic level work, and now they're building on that. They're going to announce their new plan very soon, actually. It's going to be the 14th, so in 2 days' time, we hear more from VW on their 2030 plan. The supervisory board believes that under the leadership of Dr. Diess, conditions will be optimal for the continued successful development of the entire company in the coming years as well, especially with the view of Strategy 2030. Now, Strategy 2030 is VW's plan for what they will do over the next decade. That's according to the chairman, Hans-Dieter Putsch. Now, again, Herbert Diess is someone that came from BMW, was a big player in BMW's early electric plans before they kind of wobbled a bit back in the BMW i3 and i8 days. Then he went to VW, and he has been on a mission to turn them electric. And, you know, it's great to have an engineer. He's a PhD in mechanical engineering and production engineering from back in the 1980s when he was doing his PhD. So he is occasionally, the Tesla fans that hate everything else, there's a few of those, will say, oh, Elon Musk is the only engineer leading a car company. And I'll occasionally reply, oh, apart from the world's biggest car maker, they're led by a PhD in engineering. And then they kind of shut up and go away. So I'm really pleased that, you know, he's there, never excusing what VW have done, and still got lots of ground to make up in terms of making things right. They did before his time, but he does seem to be leading them to an EV future, and it's great that they've got that consistency of management. I think it's a really good sign for you and I that there's going to be cars on the market that we might want to, you know, pick from to drive in the future, and that they will continue that way. Next, we'll talk about the European Union being very open about their desire for net zero emissions. At the minute, 2050, but we've got some news on that coming up. And there's going to be certainly a rush to make EVs by 2030 or 2035, at least the only cars you can buy. Now, a large portion of the EU recovery fund post-COVID is going to Spain. 4.3 billion euros, that's 5.1 million US dollars, is going towards Spanish EV investment to ramp up EV production, battery production as well, according to Reuters, says FordAuthority.com. The EV investment is part of a broader investment, 13 billion euros that the Spanish government are spending on sustainable transport, and that will grow by 5% by 2030. Spanish officials expect the government initiatives will increase the number of EVs on the roads. Spain, a bit like Italy, a bit of an EV laggard. Back in 2020, there were 18,000 EVs registered, but they're pretty sure that by 2023, with this investment, they'll go from having 18,000 EVs registered to 250,000 just over the next 2 years. And more jobs as well for Spain. Electric jobs, battery production, cell production. The European Union is planning on tightening emissions standards over coming weeks, and that will result in new combustion vehicles being banned. But we'll find out, like I say, in 2 days' time, July 14th, the EU will announce their new set of CO2 reductions targets. Now, we know that the last ones they set, which were for the end of 2020, had a profound effect on EVs. Firstly, until 2020, it was really hard to get supply of EVs because the car makers were holding them back. They will deny it, but they were, because if you sold too many combustion cars at the end of last year, you were fined. So the EVs offset that. So all of a sudden, you know, come 2020, surprise, surprise, oh yeah, there's no longer a 12-month waiting list for that, you know, Hyundai Kona or Kia e-Niro. No, it's not a 12-month list. You can have one tomorrow if you want. Okay, I'm exaggerating. It wasn't like that. And it's just my opinion, of course. But the rules can make a big difference. We see it in the US and China as well. And so whatever the US say on, the EU say on the 14th of July is going to have a massive impact on the global EV market. Because if they say, for instance, that all cars must be a certain target by 2030, and if the target is so big that it effectively means, because they won't ban, like they won't ban combustion cars, but they'll set emissions targets, and if they're so bad, all car makers will just say, you know what, it's not worth the investment. Like, we could probably do it, we could probably hit those targets with the best possible cleanest engines in the world, but we'll just make EVs. So that's where regulation can come in. It's a bit of a dull, boring, dry topic, but it's really important because we find out in a couple of days' time, effectively, if EVs are going to be banned by, well, if combustion cars are going to be banned by 2030, and you'll only be able to buy basically an EV over here. In 9 years' time. That's insane. I love it. Right, let's talk about a million new electric cars arriving on our roads in the first half of 2021. The first 6 months of the year saw new plug-in passenger vehicles on European roads in the first 6 months of the year reach a million. That's almost a fifth of all sales, right? 17.2%, but we're all friends. We'll call it a fifth. A fifth of passenger car sales had a plug socket on the side. So we're talking pure BEVs and plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. PHEVs. Now, those hybrids were the majority, just over 50% just in the first 6 months of the year. The rolling 12 months, so you know, so from halfway through last year to halfway through this year, it's a million plug-in cars on the roads, which is, a million pure electric cars. Need to be careful how I say it because it makes a big difference. Pure electric cars, a million in the last year. I mean, that's just a great stat. So the next time you're in the pub, are we allowed to the pub these days? But you next time you talk to someone or online and they say, well, electric cars are never going to catch on. It's all about hydrogen. You can say a million new pure electric cars added to European roads in the last 12 months alone. Yeah, it's not a fad. They're coming and they're coming fast. According to the auto analyst Matthias Schmidt, during the most recent quarter, so Q2 2021, over half a million plug-ins were registered, 564,000, with pure electrics outpacing plug-in hybrids. So the report expects 2 million plug-in cars to enter the market over the course of the year that we are in, and it'll really be about heading towards 2025 when the next CO2 fleet average emissions. I know this is it's a boring subject at times, but I do bang on about it because it really is key over here, and it's 2025 when those next set of regulations will kick in. So we don't expect anything apart from natural market forces, as in people just wanting to buy an EV between now and 2025. Then the external factors start to come in, like those rules and regs. The European Commission will propose new CO2 roadmaps and targets. It's currently a 37% reduction over 2021 levels, but that could be increased for 2030. We're talking here, when I say European, I mean the EU27 countries and the UK, as we're not one, Iceland and Norway. I'll pop a link in the show notes to Matthias's report if you would like to read more. Okay, let's talk about in the US why the federal government blocks EV chargers. Sometime in the near future, Colorado Department of Transportation officials want you to be able to pull over in a rest area and charge your EV, but federal law prevents the commercialization of interstate right-of-ways, including rest areas, park and rides, and similar facilities all across the country in the US, and it prevents that. A change to the law, which has the CDOT support, is part of this $715 billion transportation bill, which is currently being passed or has been passed by the US House. According to the Colorado Sun newspaper, the existing federal law dates back to the 1960s. Then it was enacted in order to protect and promote private businesses like gas stations and the like along those major highway routes. The federal government cited in turning down a state plan in Colorado to add charging stations to this particular location, the Burlington Welcome Center. It's on the Eastern Plains. And officials said in a letter to the state's U.S. House delegation that was the reason why they weren't allowed to put them there. There's federal law preventing them to put it on those major highway locations. Well, the House bill containing the law change now moves to the Senate, which is considering its own transportation proposal. How they'll bring those two things together, we don't know. They're looking forward to finding out. I'll pop a link to Colorado Sun, the original source of that story, in the show notes. Stick around, we'll talk electric scooters and how fast somebody got the Model S Plaid to go on their own on a drag strip. Stick around, I'll tell you more. Okay, moving on, we'll talk about a bit of a stellar deal in the US on the Chevy Bolt right now. A major model year update for 2022. The Bolt is getting a makeover, and Chevy's introducing the all-new Bolt EUV. But what if you don't want the latest 2022 model year version? What if you want to save some money? Have a look at a 2021 Bolt would be the advice of Forbes today. You need to have a look at the difference in price. Pricing on the 22 model year is still lower, but the 2021 Bolt can give you some stunning deals. So, say you want the brand new one, though, and the 2022 model year. It now starts at $32,000. That's $5,500 off the MSRP of the current base model. And the slightly larger, very slightly larger, Chevy Bolt EUV starts at $34,000. The 2022 Bolts will include options like adaptive cruise control and GM's Super Cruise. That is their hands-free driving tech. They are both firsts for the Bolt, and both come, I think, quite highly recommended from those that have driven them. But what if you want a 2021 Chevy Bolt EV? Typically below $28,000 for a brand new car, a brand new Bolt. So that's, I think, a great deal for a car that is going to give you, what, 260 miles? But if you don't want the latest, greatest, there are deals to be had with a slightly older, but still brand new, Bolt 2021 model, because they want to get them off the lots. So if you're in the markets, make sure you do your own research, have a look around, and let me know what you can find. If you can save yourself some money, I'm always keen to hear from you. Right, next on the podcast, we'll talk electric scooters, a potentially massive market. Ola, O-L-A, is the company. Ola Electric. They have a ride-hailing company, but also an EV company. Just raised another $100 million to develop electric scooters and sell them. The factory they're going to build is, or are building, spread across 500 acres in India. And the company will make 10 million electric scooters annually. 15% of the world's e-scooters by this time next year, summer 22. And they want to export them as well. Ola Electric's EV manufacturing plant will be the largest in the world, owned by parent company ANI Technologies. The chief exec, Bhavish Agarwal, announcing last month that their electric scooter factory is going to be nearing completion and they'll start rolling out vehicles very soon. I'll pop a link to Business Insider India edition if you want to read more about electric scooters being made there. And they, not only is India a huge market for two-wheeled EVs, but if they're going to export them as well, of course, the price should be competitive. Man, I can't wait to see what they start producing. And they're not mucking about, are they? 15% of the world's e-scooters produced in this one factory by Ola. 10 million vehicles annually. Brilliant. All we need to do now is to sort out the law on electric scooters. What are they like where you are? Now, I know that in Paris, they have had a trial going on with the, you know, you've got to do it through an official rental company, but there's been some pushback over here as well. You can ride a scooter, electric scooter, on the road if you do it through an official company that has this agreement in place. You haven't got to wear a helmet, but you have got to hire one from a company that's part of the trial. The quicker we can sort that out, the better. I see so many of them riding illegally on roads and pavements. Of course, you can't ride over here, at least, what's it like where you listen, an electric scooter on the pavement, not allowed to do that. And you can't ride an electric scooter on the road because they're not licensed for that. So you can't ride them anywhere apart from on private land. But I see them everywhere, but the police don't enforce it. Now, occasionally on my Twitter, I'll see maybe the Met Police in London kind of bragging, and they'll do like a blitz one morning, and they'll have police in certain, you know, certain locations, and they'll be jumping out from behind traffic lights. And occasionally I've seen a couple of times now the London police force tweeting pictures of maybe, I don't know, like 200-300 electric scooters all confiscated and I don't know, going to be resold, or you'd hope recycled or something, kind of bragging like, yes, we've taken these off the roads. And I'm like, well done. That's 300 people who weren't in a car this morning and they were on a clean green electric scooter and you took it off them. Well done, police. Slow hand clap for you. And of course, all they're doing is enforcing the law that's in place. It's not their fault. So blame the politicians. But still, I wouldn't brag about it. I wouldn't say, hey, we took all these electric scooters off of people. Oh, wonderful. Let's get them all back on motorbikes or something. Idiotic. Let's talk about how fast the Model S Plaid can go from Tesla. The YouTuber Brooks at Drag Times has bought himself one. I think he's one of the early ones because he's a massive Tesla fanboy, makes videos about them. Definitely one of those kind of key influencers, if you like. Doesn't say anything really bad about them. He has a Plaid Model S, went on the drag strip, and you have to turn on drag mode and it conditions the battery for peak power performance, which used to take 45 minutes and drain the battery. These days it takes only a few minutes. Now, he enabled that function, had a little look at the suspension settings, and by the time he'd gone back, it was already conditioned in just a few moments. That's brilliant. He explained that the best run on the quarter mile he did was 9.24 seconds, which is just crazy fast, a tie with the current record set by Jay Leno. Of course, he did that with Tesla's backing. This was just a guy who's got the car and he taking it to a drag strip. But check out the numbers. 0 to 60 was not below 2 seconds. Shock horror, the Tesla haters will love it. Yeah, but it was 2.01, so get a life. So even if you don't use the super sticky tires and the weird stuff that you paint on the tarmac to make it stick, all the things that Tesla do to get below 2 seconds, 0 to 60, it was 2.01 in a stock car. So get over it. That's crazy fast. 0 to 100 kilometres an hour, which of course is 0 to 62 miles an hour, 2.11 seconds, which is still face melting. 0 to 100 miles an hour is 4.19 seconds. I just can't fathom it. Like, 0 to 60 times are bandied around, and they're kind of pointless because you can't do it on public roads. 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. You're going to kill someone. But then you start to look at those top speeds. If you were on, I don't know, the German Autobahn or whatever, 0 to 100, 4 seconds. 0 to 130, 7 seconds. 0 to 150, 9 seconds. Just insane speeds. The engineering of the Tesla Model S Plaid is crazy, isn't it? It's out of this world. Let's talk about repairing one, though, and repairing a Tesla. Here's the story of a guy who took his Model 3 back to Tesla and they wanted to charge him $16,000. He took it to an independent garage and they fixed it for $700. His name's Donald Bone, and he drove over some debris. And it kicked up some debris, broke a coolant pipe, and so he took it to Tesla. The service centre told him that it needed a whole new battery pack, $16,000. Now, he didn't have comprehensive coverage on the car, and it wasn't covered under his insurance, and Tesla wouldn't replace it, so he went to the electrified garage. According to AutoEvolution.com, they picked up this story. The bottom line is the independent repairers, so you might know the name Rich Benoit or Rich Rebuilds for his YouTube channel, it went to his garage. It cost him $700 because they were able to identify the part that had been broken and replace it because you can buy the parts from Tesla. Whereas if something small breaks, Tesla, and they're not the only ones that do this, Apple are much like it, they replace the whole module. They won't look at it and go, well, okay, so if we desolder this part from the motherboard on your iPhone and we put in a new resistor or something, it'll work again. And this will cost a dollar, but it's a whole new part of the phone. Now, that is wasteful. It goes to landfill if it's not being recycled. And of course, for this chap, he didn't spend $16,000 on a whole new battery pack. He spent $700 on the part. And he also made the point that when he said to Tesla, well, if you are putting a new battery pack in for $16,000, I'll have the old one because I own it. They wouldn't let him do that either. There is also the issue that now he's had it replaced outside of Tesla. They retain the right to turn his car off. So this happened to Rich Rebuilds as well. He put his car back on the road and Tesla turned off fast charging. Now, I'm kind of a two of... What's your opinion on this? They turned off access to the supercharging network, which I understand, because the supercharging network is Tesla's. So if someone's done a dodgy repair, and he didn't, but if someone's done a garage repair, you're plugging that car into their supercharger, and it can blow it up in a way that if you have a dodgy repair done on a petrol car, you probably can't do the same amount of damage by just filling up the tank at the petrol station. So I understand that. But Tesla also turned off his ability to fast charge completely on any fast charging station, Teslas or not, because if you own a Tesla, the car is never really yours. They can turn off bits of the car at will, and they did on his. They were like, well, we didn't do the repair, so we're turning that bit off. So he had to slow charge it. So this chap so far in this story hasn't had that happen to him, but it might. They might say, well, look, you know, you didn't do the whole new battery pack thing. We're turning off charging, which they have the right to do. Moving on, total cost of ownership is often talked about in the fleet world. But why is it so important? Well, ChargePoint's Alan Koster penned a really interesting article, and I thought I'd read you a couple of bits of what he wrote. This is obviously from a ChargePoint's perspective, but he says, while fleets have spent over a century perfecting the infrastructure to store and distribute petrol and diesel, the move to EVs requires new infrastructure. This needs to be thought through. Fleets can't merely install a few sockets and hope for the best. A thorough understanding of a fleet's needs, use cases, and deployment is required. Businesses must ask themselves, will vehicles charge overnight at a depot or be taken home by drivers? Will these vehicles drive beyond their range, meaning public or DC fast charging is needed? He says the early adopters of EV fleets have already realized up to 25% cost savings that come from greater efficiency, more affordable refueling, and reduced maintenance. They put themselves in a pole position for expansion as more vehicles become available and the policy environment moves towards further electrification. I'll pop a link to that story in the show notes if you'd like to read more, if you want to have a look at sort of the fleet side of things. I do. I find it very interesting because these working vehicles, some of them work 24 hours a day, only stopping to charge, can do so much more for the air quality around us than the cars that you and I drive, which sit, and I'm looking at my security cameras right now on the monitor that I have in front of me. Yes, I can see three cars in the driveway and none of them are going anywhere. One of them's been used this morning to go about 1.5 miles to take my little fella to nursery, and that really should have been done on an electric bike. Slapped wrists for me. Okay, question of the week right now with emobilitynorway.com. What is your ideal stoppage time on a long distance road trip? Not talking about charging, by the way, just, you know, whether you're in an EV or not. If you're on a road trip, what is your ideal or typical time that you stop for? We'll collate the results and then work out what it means for EVs and charging. But for now, just tell me, how long do you like to stop for? I've got to be honest. I'll share mine now. I didn't yesterday. I'll share mine. Quite a long time. Now, if I rewind 20 years, when I used to drive back and see my folks 240 miles away, back in my ICE driving days, admittedly in some reasonable cars I've owned over the years, like a little Audi TT was quite nice, I would probably get up in the morning, have some brekkie and a gentleman's break, but not a cup of tea. And I just jump in the car and drive for 4 hours and just stick it at, you know, 70, 75 on cruise control and just go and get out of the car 4 and a bit hours later back at my parents and be like, right, morning, have a cup of tea and a bacon sandwich, right? Whereas these days, obviously, you know, plus 20 years on the bladder, but also with a little fella, You know, I do. If I've driven for 2 or 3 hours, I enjoy a stop. I enjoy not getting a cup of coffee to take away, but maybe having a cup of coffee inside the Starbucks for 10 or 15 minutes, just a bit of rest and relaxation, look at a few different sites. And so maybe I'm stopping for 25, 30 minutes now on a road trip each time. I'm not a right splash and dash kind of person anymore. But what are you? I'd like to know your situation. Email me hello@evnewsdaily.com. As always, the heroes of this podcast are the Patreon supporters, and you can be one if you want. Check out Patreon, patreon.com/evnewsdaily. Our premium partners get a daily mention. Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, thank you Brad, Porsche of The Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, of course nationalcarcharging.com and alohacharge.com. Nice little Hawaiian story yesterday if you missed it on the podcast. Derek Riley from the EV Review Island YouTube channel, Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and emobilitynorway.com. Have a good one. See you tomorrow. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.